All right, keep in mind that God is addressing a whore that is lurking outside of his window, the window of his home in heaven. And he says that with this whore, there's an individual man that is traveling around the world and gathering an enormous following. And that all of those that are following this man and in the intoxicated by the whore are stupid. They're irrational. They're ignorant. And then he's saying that this whore, who he, you know, expects you to say, all right, we're not talking about a sex here. We're talking about someone who pretends affection for money, who feigns devotion, and that he expects you to say, all right, is there any place where God defines who the whore is and associates the whore with something that's important? And constantly the whore is being described as religious. For example, in Hosea, the first thing that Yahweh does with the prophet Hosea, whose name means salvation, is he says, I want you to understand why I'm divorcing Israel for unfaithfulness, for having breached the covenant. So what I want you to do is go to the temple down the street, the pagan temple, not Yahweh's home. I want you to go to a pagan shrine. And at all the pagan shrines, they had prostitutes. They were temple priestesses. To make the religious experience more compelling, they would offer sex for a donation. And he said, I want you to go, and one of those temple prostitutes, I want you to marry her. I want you to be married to a whore. So you understand what I'm dealing with Israel. Now, did he ask Hosea to go marry a whore that this was just the oldest profession? I'm out trying to make a living. I'm a sex worker. Or did he say, I want you to go to the religious institution and marry a religious whore? Who was Gomer?
Oh, those are his children.
Yeah. Gomer was not a woman trying to eke out a living to support her family by engaging in prostitution for money. Gomer was a religious whore, a religious prostitute. Right there, you ought to be able to put the pieces together and say, it's the whore of religion. But doesn't God go to great lengths to describe the whore as religious, as a reflection of a nation's culture, its religion, its politics? And doesn't he specifically associate the whore with Babylon, and Babylon with Satan, and Satan with religion?
Well, let me ask you, once you know the Nimrod to Talmud's story, how can you not see that everywhere?
And Semiramis, who is Astarte, the mother of God, the queen of heaven, and how the sun impregnated the queen of heaven, the mother of God, so that the virgin could deliver the child, and that Tammuz became the son of the sun. And that Tammuz, you have Lent, which is weeping for Tammuz,
right?
Which is now Lent, and it culminates with Easter Sunday, named after Astarte.
And you tell people
the Babylonian goddess.
They say, don't take my Easter away. And for God's sake, don't tell me about Christmas now. Ruin another holiday for me.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about...
stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the popularity of Easter and Christmas in the West, and you realize that God tells you the whole story about them, but you can look at any history book.
Yeah.
And he even tells you that religion is incorporated with Astarte, the queen of heaven, the mother of God. That's Satan's favorite trick pony.
Yeah.
And that Baal, the Lord, is Satan's favorite guise. And yet, emulate all of these religious ideals. God even goes so far as to say that the beast that tramples down the world, the most vicious beast ever conceived as an institution, grew directly out of Imperial Rome. Duh. What grew out of Imperial Rome? Look at your history. Look at the period from Constantine to Theodosius. Roman Catholicism.
Well, all the way up to the Holy Roman Empire. I mean, just...
Correct.
You have no rivals for that.
Correct. It's not hard to figure out. It's obvious. It's in your face. But the thing that you have to do to understand any of it is to care enough about this information, to observe it, and then to make connections so that you understand it. Anyway, it says, she is disturbingly loud, creating a confusing commotion. And she is openly defiant and rebellious. In her household, in keeping with her slanderous stance and covert manner, that's not a way to live. So God has previously told us, you want to live, observe my Torah. And now he is saying, as it relates to this loud mouth, conniving, openly defiant and rebellious community, household, why don't you read Beth as the basis of covenant, in her covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Her slanderous stance and her covert manner, not a way to live. In fact, when Yahweh was specifically condemning Shaul and Chabaouk, written exactly 666 years before Paul would pen his first letter, and he calls out Paul by name as Shaul and Chabaouk, one of the things that God says is, none that choose to believe him will ever find any satisfaction.
Right.
God is saying here, you follow the household of the whore and the whore's troubadour, Paul. You'll not live. And that really is it. It's just live. God's not saying that if you are beguiled by Pauline Christianity, that you're going to be tormented in hell.
No.
He says you're not going to live. When you die, it's the end of your existence. You will have squandered your soul. Your soul will cease to exist. Now, influencing the way one conducts life. Panam. Along the streets, in the most prominent places. Establishing a base to compel. In the most spacious public squares, and beside every corner, she deceptively lurks, ready to deceitfully ambush. That is Proverbs 7:12.
Right.
I would like you to tell me, you're a student of world history, in the Western world, throughout Europe, and throughout the Americas, what institution do you find in the most prominent places, establishing large edifices in the most spacious public squares and along every street corner? What do you
even
find?
If you went down the most famous economic street in New York,
Wall Street,
you will hit one.
Yes, you will.
Everywhere, steeples.
Right.
You can't paint Vermont
without a church steeple. Without a church steeple,
you can't avoid it.
Right. You cannot. You cannot paint a European city anywhere, any European city.
Oh yeah. Well,
without that skyline.
Giant cathedral.
With its spires of the cathedrals.
But I'm talking even little bitty towns all across America.
Oh, everywhere. Everywhere.
Canada is just...
Today I'm in Ohio. I don't think I've ever been in a place with more churches. Big churches. I mean, they have churches here that are city blocks. Mega churches.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Catholic to the max, this place. You know, every street. It seems like every corner. Certainly in the most prominent places. And, you know, there is nothing else like it. There is no other institution in the history of the world that has been so dominant in public squares and public places along every street corner. You know, even in the in the time of Carthage and Greece and Rome, you know, these pagan societies.
Well, that's usually just one giant temple.
That's right. They would build one giant temple
on the hill.
On the hill, right? One giant, you know, and in Athens there weren't temples on every street corner. There weren't. There were marketplaces everywhere.
Sure.
But not temples.
No.
You know, the Parthenon was up there at the top. And, you know, if you wanted to go to the home of the gods, you had to go to Mount Olympus. Mount Olympus was the furthest from along the spacious squares of cities and corners of roads. The one thing that is just everywhere is ubiquitous.
But you can't lay in wait. You can't lay in wait, if you want to use that analogy, unless you're around the corner where somebody comes around a corner where you get them.
Yeah. And I this is not only saying that you're going to find edifices built on the central squares and along the streets and on every corner, which there's only one institution that this fits, which is Christian churches. It says that in them, the whore of religion deceptively lurks, ready to deceitfully ambush, which means she ain't in there. Is Satan? She isn't in there with the horns and the pointy tail. She ain't telling you, hey, the Lord is my title. No, she's deceptively pretending to be God. When you go in there and you bow down and you sing your songs and you read from your Christian New Testament,
you're told
you are worshiping Satan as God.
Yep.
That is what you're doing. Whether or not you know it or not, doesn't matter. That's what you're doing.
What's the word for lurk around, to ambush?
It is Arab.
I just thought it was funny.
Arab. Yeah, Arab.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a word that's become synonymous these days with Islam.
Mm-hmm.
Arab and Muslim are used to be synonymous. And it's true that, you know, virtually all Arabs are Muslims. All Muslims aren't Arab. But Arab has a lot of negative connotations. Clandestine, covert, treacherous, false pretenses, stalking, artifice, trickery, maiming, killing prey.
Mm-hmm.
Arab is not a good term, not in Hebrew.
No.
And you know, and by the way, in the Quran, they claim that it's Arabic. Where do you think they get Arabic and Arab?
Well,
what language?
It's still Hebrew.
It's Hebrew.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just like Satan in the Quran tells Muslims that which is good for them to eat is halal. And Yahweh tells us in Yashayah that halal is Satan's name.
Hello.
You know, I'm just gonna put it right in your face. And of course, the Quran claims that it was revealed in perfect Arabic, and Quran is based upon the Hebrew word kara, which, by the way, means to read and recite. And here in the case, the Quran claims to be in perfect Arabic, and Yahweh says Arabic is that which is deceitful, deceptive, a ploy. It's covert, it's treacherous, it's deadly.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't have to be the sharpest tool in the drawer to figure this out.
No. Well, that's the encouraging part. You know, it's really, if you really want to check this out, if you really want to figure out whether this is just a bunch of extrapolation on somebody's part, yours or mine or ours,
mm-hmm.
It ain't so, pal.
Yeah.
You're very experts that everyone claims tells them, you know, their lexicons and so forth, is they can't hide it.
You know, one of the nice things about an amplified translation is particularly the way they're done in these books. An Observation for Our Time is available at the website blessyahweh.com, blessyahweh.com. And it will be linked to the Yada Yah website and to Introduction to God and Questioning Paul and the others, including Prophet of Doom. But it's presented in such a way that it is naturally just in the bold, and we've been sharing mostly the bold, a bit amplified, so that the translation is more complete. But then the Hebrew, the basis of the Hebrew words that comprise the basis of those translations is presented in italics within a parenthetical.
Mm-hmm.
And then following that is an amplification of those words, so that you have the full measure of what those words mean, including their related words and the roots. And so you can make the decision on your own accord. Do all of these things apply? Do some of them apply? To which one of these apply? Which ones can I reject? Which ones should I accept? Do they all apply? You can look them up and say, yeah, is this really a complete and accurate definition of this word? And after you've looked up, as you have probably done, 1,000 words over several thousand times, and you say, yeah, that is a that's an accurate, that is what the word means, then after a while, you might just want to read it.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I started, what I would do is I would read the bold print, and then I would read the commentary, and then I would go back and break down all the words, you know, and yours, and then I got to the point where I started, okay, let's make sure we're right, and then I started going through the lexicons, and then I just added more and more research material so I could make sure I could go at it from every other angle. But whichever way you do it to make it comfortable, it's not a hard read.
No.
And it's certainly, you don't have to look at every word all the time. After a while, you know.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, I actually think there's enormous benefit in doing what you did, which is that, first of all, we ought not trust anybody. You ought to trust Yahweh. He is trustworthy. But any individual who's trying to convey as accurately and completely what he had to say is naturally flawed. You know, we have our own biases. My bias just happens to be that I like the God that revealed this information as he presented himself. You know, I really like his accessibility, his sense of humor, his style. And so I have a tendency to look at everything he says and render it in a manner that's consistent with the God I've come to know and love. That's my prejudice. And so I'll state that right up front. And I also state that I'm flawed and that, you know, I've got no, I'm never going to say that I have credentials that impress anybody. So the smartest thing you could do is to go check it.
Sure.
Because your soul's at stake. Go check it. Go check it.
Yeah.
You know, be self-reliant in this regard. Make it an important aspect of your life to verify for yourself what God had to say. Now, I'm going to help you because I'm going to tell you, here's the alphabet these letters, these words were written in, and these are what the letters themselves mean.
Yeah.
Here's the lexicons that you can use. Here's the interlinears that you can use. Here's the oldest extant manuscripts. And here's how to use them. And here's then what we're going to do is we're going to go through the Hebrew grammar, and we're going to expose what the stems represent in terms of relationships and what the conjugations represent in terms of ongoing or completed behaviors, that Hebrew has no verbs that are stuck in time, that they're all liberated in time. And we're going to talk about the volitional moods. And then we're going to go through thousands and thousands and thousands of statements that Yahweh made using those tools, so you get to see how they're deployed. And then if there's something that's really challenging, we're going to write paragraphs about it that explains, here's the thought process and the information that was available to deduce these conclusions and what your options are regarding these conclusions.
Right.
And, you know, you do that, and then you go off and you say, all right, I'm going to do it first to verify it, which is what you did. But that's not why you do it anymore. You do it now because you learn so much more.
Yeah, it's fun to dig, and you do.
Yeah, you learn so much more. But beyond learning so much more, there's an aspect to comprehension. You know, when Yahweh says, I want you to treasure my Torah, and I want you to inscribe it on your heart, there's a process that we can use to accomplish that. And that is when, if you're listening to this program and you've heard us read a passage, for example, you don't own that material. You now know it, but your memory will be fleeting. If you then go and you you look up the chapter in that it was written and you read it, mm-hmm. you'll be closer to retaining it, but you still won't own the material. If then you read it, you read the commentary that's about it, you think of what was said about it, and you go back through it a third time, and you're really thoughtful about it, and you challenge what is said, and you try to apply what it's said, then you're probably going to remember it. But I don't think you own it still.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own it until you've invested something of yourself in the process of understanding it, and then you've actually applied it.
Yeah.
Then you own it. Then you've inscribed it on your heart, on your seat of judgment. Then it frames the perspective from which you look at the world. And when you do what you do, Kirk, you transition from being aware to knowing
to understanding
right. to owning it.
Yes, I think so. I mean, you can't snatch this away from me, no matter how good old Paul is.
That's correct. Yeah, you own the material. And when you own the material, that's and by the way, you can own material both good and bad.
Sure.
I own Islam, man. I mean, I own that material.
Yeah.
I mean, when I own it, it's impossible for somebody to fool me on Islam.
Mm-hmm.
There is no argument you can bring on behalf of Islam that I cannot refute.
Yeah,
and there's no way for anyone to refute any argument that I bring against Islam.
No.
Because I don't only know the material and understand the material. I own the material.
Mm-hmm.
And as it relates to the Torah, I'm certain there's people that know the Torah better than I do. I'm certain that there's people who are more scholastic than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what God said.
Yeah.
I understand what he said. And I own this material.
Right.
I've applied it. I've invested in it. I've come to make it not only part of the fabric of my life, but it's the perspective that I evaluate everything.
Yeah.
And well, you're in the same spot. Larry's in the same spot. So many of our covenant family are in that same spot. There's no belief. There's no doubt. We know.
Now, isn't that interesting, though, that you throw something out, and I can debate that, mm-hmm. and I can look it up and check it, and I'm not mm-hmm. hostile to you, and if you said these same things to a Christian, and I was one, but when you said it to me, I knew a lot of these things were true that you were saying, so that's a little different, but most Christians, you throw this out, and it so challenges them that they either do like the people that do to Larry,
yeah. just reject him.
Start quoting Paul and tell him he's a jerk.
Right.
Or they just walk away. For me, if I get a chance to talk to anybody for any length of time, they just walk away. They just, like, don't do this to me. Don't take my Paul.
Yeah, that's right. Don't take my precious Jesus.
Don't take my precious Jesus. I'm going, well, don't you want to know the guy's real name?
No.
They don't.
No. No, you've got to be willing to be invested in the material.
Yeah.
That's why God shuns airheads. He says, you know, if you're an airhead, you're going to be religious. We got nothing to talk about. I can't reason with you. There were three passages that we've uncovered just in this new book
mm-hmm.
where God uses a term where he says, and he's speaking to religious people. He said, I cannot comprehend them. I don't understand. They make no sense to me.
Anything?
I can't comprehend them. I cannot endure them. In other words, I can't stand to be around them. And number three, I can't save them. So God specifically says of the thoughtless religious people who are unwilling to engage in this process of investigation, of observation, of contemplation, of understanding, and ultimately owning the material by applying it, that he says, that those who are unwilling to do these things, he says, I do not understand them. I cannot comprehend them. It's just like the garden slug. The garden slug may be communicating, but man, it's just nothing but burps and spitting to me. He says, I cannot endure being around them. I'm not fond of being around garden slugs either. I think they're really yucky. Can't endure. Can't. Don't want to be around them. Can't understand them. Don't want to be around them, can't fix them, can't save them. And if you are one of the thoughtless religious people, he's speaking to you.
What a horrible thing to, if you're religious and you read that.
Yeah. Oh, you'd never read it because that requires a thoughtful analysis of the word.
Yeah.
That, you know, you'd have to look up what the word means. You can't just read your King James Bible.
No.
You've got to actually look up the Hebrew word. Say, what does this word mean? And it was negated with lo, and so it means I can't endure, I can't comprehend, I cannot salvage, can't save, can't rescue, can't fix. You know, a friend of mine that I was partnered with in my last business, he said, you can fix a lot of things, but you can't fix stupid.
True.
God's saying I can fix a lot of things. You know, if you look at Dode, Dode did a lot of dumb stuff. And God fixed everything that Dode did. Because Dode was brilliant. But, you know, God can't fix stupid.
No. So you don't have to be stupid. You don't have to be ignorant.
You do not have to be ignorant.
We all have different levels of intellect, but you can grasp this. He writes plain enough that a child can understand this. And certainly because parents can teach their children, he encourages it to. So
I'll bet you that, Kirk, you spent as much time in the theological classes as I did.
Yeah.
I'll bet you spent as much time in Hebrew class as I did. I'll bet you that you spent as much time studying to be a religious scholar as I did.
I'm sure you would be correct there.
Yes. And if you were to combine our investment in religious scholarship, theology, and language.
Mm-hmm. We're a big fat zero.
I spent more time consuming my sandwich for lunch today.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to take a different approach and say, well, how much time have you invested in Yahweh's testimony? Well, for me, it's been better part of 6 days a week for 15 years,
yeah.
An average of probably 10 hours a day.
I think we're well into 8 years, I think, now. So.
Yeah. That's a lot of time.
That's a lot of time.
It's
every day.
A lot of time. Yes, indeed. And she establishes her influence over him, harshly overpowering and binding him. Him, by the way, masculine,
mm-hmm.
singular. One man.
Right.
So here is the whore, Satan, establishing her influence over him. And don't. And people get caught up and say, well, the whore of Babylon, that's feminine. And Satan, the adversary, is masculine.
She's kissing him. It's a him.
You know, folks, spiritual entities
do not have
sexuality.
No.
Spiritual entities have a feminine and a maternal and parental, fatherly, paternal nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh, for example, expresses his paternal nature as the father of the covenant. Yahweh expresses his maternal nature as our spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit. And so every aspect of the things that are important to Yahweh are conveyed as either feminine or masculine based upon what aspect of Yahweh's nature is being conveyed. Yahweh is spirit. He is not a sexual being. Satan is light, an energy-based spiritual being. Satan is not a sexual being. And so Satan, like Yahweh, has the ability to manifest aspects of his nature in a feminine way and in a masculine way. He is the adversary from a masculine perspective, and Satan is the whore manifesting Satan's feminine characteristics. The church, for example, of Satan. Feminine.
Mm-hmm.
So, in this particular case, she, the whore of religion, is focusing her seduction to overpower and bind a single individual, Paul.